will then adopt with the RRR report after discussion. So it's quite a, of course, also our own program as well as a committee. We also adopt our own program for the quarter that we are in. So that brings us to open this meeting, colleagues, and all of you are most welcome. Without any further ado, I'll then hand over to the department to then make their own arrangements with regard to the presentation. Yes.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, honourable members. Glad to see you again this morning. Allow me just to introduce the team. Chair, again, my name is Mark Gordon. I'm the VDG for Chemicals and Waste Management. Sitting next to me is Dr. Mpho Chitangoni. He's the director responsible for the asbestos program. You know, Skunza and Moscow will be dealing with the rest of the biodiversity aspects. Michelle Governor is my chief director responsible for licensing and land remediation. And of course, you know, Sibu and Luiso. Chair, I'm
going to
start.
Before you, at times we take it for granted that the people who are here, all of them know us as well. And the mistake we make from time to time, when in fact some colleagues might be coming before us for the first time. So I think it's only in order that we introduce ourselves as well. I'm Jason Tembu, the chairperson of the Control Committee on Environmental Affairs.
I am Silas Makubela, a member of the committee from the ANC.
I am Joni Ebert.
Hi, good morning. I'm Petri Matilo, member of the committee.
Good morning. I'm Helen Picker, and I'm the portfolio committee.
Did you say Helen? What?
Helen, please.
Morning, Amila.
Thank you very much. Of course, we also have our parliamentary staff here. The secretary is Mrs. Mamabolo, but she always prefers to be called Miss Matubela. Now, I don't understand. I don't know why. Then we have got Dr. Scott Mezefai, who's our advisor in matters of environment, advising the committee. So where was Tanya? Oh, Tanya went out, my secretary. Oh, that's Tanya. By the way, people who are light sitting complain, what do you call them? So, but basically, again, it's our pleasure to meet with you. As you will know, as we deal with the asbestos issues, it's something that has really been troubling many South Africans. In our engagement with various communities and NGOs, this matter keeps on cropping up from time to time. But also in the context of other gases that are indeed troubling our people. We raised the map last week. We raised the issues of mine dams. And fortunately, we also saw that matter being raised in one of the newspapers, weeklies in the country. Indeed, we, as a country, our parliament, we need to have some holistic plans on how we deal with these things that affect our people negatively, including asbestos, so that we, as we go on our constituency work, as we interact with our people, we are able to say, here is what government is doing. This is then the importance of this briefing. And again, we are hopeful that we will also meet with the with our other colleagues in minerals and energy, mining, so that we also deal with these issues of mine dams that are a serious case to the lives of our people. As we said last week, when you live alongside these mass mine dams, your lives are always endangered. So I think we will have to find a way of how to deal with those as well after we have interacted with these communities. And again, colleagues will know last week again as we're dealing with another subject matter. We raised the issue of the wildlife economy, this multi-billion money stealing in that. Again, we are happy that you are here to give us a briefing on this, and we will then take a discussion. But one thing that is fundamental that we have raised is that this industry seems to be lily-white and not transformed and not in keeping with what the Constitution instructs us to do. So it would be very interesting to get from you what we do to change this complexion of this industry, so that this industry is representative of the people of this country as a whole. So, but we will then hear from yourself today. And again, we have now been joined by my colleague, Upungane, Honorable Member Hadele, who is also a member of this committee from the Democratic Alliance. Most welcome, Ms. Upungane. Sorry that we started before you arrived. Next time it won't happen. Yeah. Mark, that is.
Thank you, Chen. Good morning to everybody. Chen, thanks for the introduction. I think you said it spot on that asbestos has been quite a topical issue for many years. And we've seen it in the Mail and Guardian article, well, the mining issue and silicosis on Friday, and also I think yesterday papers carried some of the mining issues. And I think you're right, Chair, that at some stage we have to come here with the other departments to get an integrated, holistic way forward in terms of how government is handling this problem of the mine dumps holistically. Chair, allow me to just give an introduction. And by way of introduction, I just want to give the history of where we're coming from with the asbestos progress. And then I'll hand over to Dr. Stangoni to just give you progress since we last presented at Portfolio Committee. So in 1996, Cabinet launched an investigation into asbestos contamination in affected areas after some community started complaining about it. In 1998, there was an asbestos summit that was held in South Africa, and that summit then led to the ban of the production manufacturing of asbestos in South Africa in 1999. So in 1999, Cabinet took a decision to ban products, asbestos products, manufacturing and production of asbestos in South Africa. And at that stage, we started talking about the differentiation between primary asbestos and secondary. So today, you know that the title is secondary asbestos remediation. Primary remediation talks to the mining of asbestos, mine dumps that was under the control of the then DE. So what happened in 2002? There were a few court cases where the mining companies were taken to court by workers in mines, and we're still talking about the primary mining aspect. And compensation was then paid out by those mining companies, and the case was closed in terms of worker compensation around people that worked in the mines. But in 2004, Cabinet commissioned the department to undertake a study on the asbestos, on the effects of secondary asbestos contamination. So what is happening typically, you'd have workers that worked in the mines, they would come home with fibers and all of that, and still start affecting their families. And then they were found that there were large areas where transportation of asbestos. So at the railway sidings where asbestos is offloaded into the trucks and the railway cars, they find asbestos on the railway sidings, where trucks transported the asbestos away from the mines on roads that led to the factories. There was asbestos spilled on roads and so forth. So while DME dealt with the closure of the mines and finished off there, the issue of secondary asbestos contamination did not finish off there. We still got a problem with secondary asbestos. So in 2006, Chair, the study was completed. We further enhanced the study on the secondary asbestos by inclusion of a social impact assessment, which was done in 2008. In 2011, a TAB memo was put together by various departments, and that went to Cabinet, and then at that stage, Cabinet endorsed in 2012 the secondary asbestos plan for South Africa, and at that time commissioned the establishment of an intergovernmental committee, intergovernmental task team, on dealing with secondary asbestos in 2012. And so I must say that it took a long time of toing and froing. My staff advised me that they came many times to the different portfolio committees at the time to get the secondary asbestos remediation plan to be approved by Cabinet. It was only approved in 2013 after being completed in 2008. In 2015, this year, Cabinet approved the establishment of an interministerial committee on secondary asbestos remediation. And I think this is now where we've come to report back to Portfolio Committee, say, in terms of in this year, what's happened, where we are, what is the progress with the intergovernmental task team, what are our challenges, and how we're moving forward in terms of progress. At this stage, I'm going to hand over to Dr. Chitango.
Okay, thank you very much, DDG, Chairperson, and committee members. I'm going to take you through the progress on secondary asbestos remediation, as you said. Okay, thank you very much. We're still young, but this technology sometimes will give you troubles. I think I just want us to start with this slide that shows, I will normally use it in any meetings that we go to. Asbestos is a silent killer, if one can put it like that. You only realize its effect when you are almost about 50 years or 60 years. That's when you start to realize that you're sick. And by the time when you realize you're sick, you must know that is the time when you're almost facing your graveyard. And that becomes a problem. So that's why we call it a silent killer. These are the affected communities in terms of asbestos. The upper part is focus group B, talks to Limpopo province.
Sorry, Chair, I just wanted to say that the presentation that you've had, we just added a couple of slides on the map, and just to give an update on the silent killer. So we haven't changed the presentation substantially. We just wanted to give some more overview.
Okay, thank you very much, Luigi. So on the right corner there is focus group A, and then on your left we've got focus group A. The focus group A is in the Northern Cape province, and that's what we used to call, it's along the asbestos mine belt. That's your Prisca, Kuruman, up under the Pomfret area. The Pomfret used to fall under the Northwest province, but now falls under the part of it falls under the Northern Cape. So you've got now the on focus area B, which is your Pinch mostly, and your part of Mafefe, a town, some of the areas that are affected. You've got a bit of bouncing there. By the time we did the study, there was indication that there was asbestos mining in production. We visited the mine, but fortunately, there's no secondary contamination. It was only primary, which was in the mine itself. So the primary asbestos contamination in this country, if one would put it straight, it is in Limpopo province and in the Northern Cape province. These are the lands of the person exposed to asbestos. So you can imagine, I mean, it's like somebody who's having a dry, mostly the one that's to your left. And this is what normally happens, the lungs of a person who has been exposed to asbestos, in other words, suffering from asbestos-related diseases. These are the conditions you are of it. You see the mesothelioma due to exposure to asbestos. That's the lung of a person on your left-hand side there. You see the malignant pleural mesothelioma on your right. That's one of the asbestos disease as well. The asbestos fibers in the lungs. If you check the down screen, the orange circle, so that is the exposure. So it shows you that the fibers actually find its way into the lung of a person, similar way that the smoke does. This is what asbestos looks like. So it's actually in a rock. It's embedded on a rock. It gets crushed. So people normally get exposed through the crushing process. So the mining activity would happen, then the second part becomes a crushing now. And we all know, mostly in South Africa at the time, people that have been crushing stuff, and most of them obviously were women at the stage, because their husbands would be mostly working in mine itself. So the crushing part or the milling part happens at your milling site, mostly by women. If you go there, I remember some of the stats we got from the Northern Cape has been that 98% of the milling people are actually women. So you can imagine what really happens there. This is somebody suffering from asbestos. So you pick up this type of stuff. If you look at the old man there, it's almost in his late 70s or 80s. So that's the time when you realize that it's sick. But then the moment you start to try and find some solution to the problem, the person is dead. These are some of the houses in the country, as we speak, in the Northern Cape and in Limpopo province, built out of asbestos contaminated material. So that's the wall of a house on your left, and you can see the black spot there is actually asbestos fibers. You check everything that's black which you see on your left screen, that's all asbestos fibers in that wall. So when it rains, then we know that the mud is not strong like a cement. So it means the asbestos fibers get exposed. On the right wall, where I'm just circling today, those are asbestos fibers on the wall. So when kids are playing, as we know in the villages, they'll play almost going around the house itself. So this creates the house walls, asbestos fibers get exposed. To extend that, some of the people we visited in Bobo, as we speak, when they are having lunch, Chairperson, when they are having lunch seated with their pub, we all know in the village how we eat. You've got pub, you've got the soup with meat on side. When the wind is blowing, the asbestos fibers find its way right into the soup of the meat. And you can't separate it when you're eating. So you have people eating asbestos on a daily basis. Okay. I think this much of what Chris is on this slide, the DDG gave history around that. And it's very important to indicate that the number of people that are affected by secondary asbestos are counted actually in millions. So you're not talking about few hundreds that are there, you're talking about millions of people. These are ranging from young kids at school, all the way to kids that are born last week as we speak, all the way to the very oldest person in the village. So all of them are affected by asbestos in that area. So the corporate actually talked to what DDG spoke about, the whole evidence history around stuff, so I'm not going to go to that. Now, in summary, this is how we are affected by asbestos. We've got in the region of about 241 homes that are directly affected. So you're talking about the whole house either to be destroyed and the new house be constructed. You've got schools. We talk about 35 schools here. And majority of these schools are primary schools. And we all know that a person is prone to a disease when you're severe. So imagine if we're talking about 25 or 36 of those schools are really primary schools. So these people are getting exposed at a very young age. Roads, you're talking about 27 roads, we've got a certain number of kilometers, it goes more than 1,000 kilometers. Majority of that, obviously, is in the Northern Cape province, sort of that mine belt and some of the villages around, but we've got about 27 roads, like in the number, we've got the kilometers in the next slide. Public places, we've got about 41. Public spaces, we're talking about, you know, in the villages, we still have our administration happening at the traditional offices. So the post office is there, any kind of like service you want, community service, you get it from those type of public spaces. Then we're talking about churches as well there, or place of worship, so those are all the affected sites that we have in the country. Now, the study had about three options. There was first option which we call no action alternative. In other words, we just keep quiet, Chairperson, and act as we don't see these problems. Really, from the study, it came up clear that this is not a preferred option. We wouldn't want to live with contaminated sites in our country, leaving it as a sheath, doing nothing at all. That would be really irresponsible of us as people of the country. The next part becomes the permanent relocation. This is actually an option where you seal off the whole community, you relocate people to a different new locality. This option is preferable in small communities. But when you've got a larger part affected, it becomes very costly. Because it comes with the second round of study as well. There's a study which we normally call it cultural or heritage assessment. So you need to identify all the graves around, you need to identify the neighborhood, because people who want to sit You want to keep what we call social cohesion. So this would be very expensive. It needs to be done at a very large scale. So it is really becomes like it's applicable when you're talking about a small community of about maybe 10 people or 15 households or something like that. But unfortunately, majority of the success rate, you're talking about hundreds and hundreds of households. The next part is temporary relocation with in-situ remediation. This way, for instance, you go, we relocate the whole household temporarily, we keep them at a temporary staying locality, we remediate the whole place, we build them a house. So this way, even the Department of Human Services may come in, because that's what I'm saying. Instead of you building a house for young people or building a house for other people, which is good, but you've got people that are staying where there's asbestos contamination. Can't we then start to remove these people and say, Mama, move here with the rest of your family, we construct an asbestos-free house for you, then you can come back when the house is finished. So that's what we talk about, temporary location with in-situ remediation. It was estimated at the time that it would take us something like about 10 years. So that was 2008. So if you imagine from 2008 and we only now start to be putting the plan and moving or implementing it now, the 10-year period must really kind of lapse, and given the financial constraints we have as a country, it becomes a bit challenging now in terms of how do we move this forward. Now, selection of the remediation option is based on the common sense of the asbestos hazards to people and appropriate measures to be taken during remediation. So in other words, we'll try by all means that we avoid unnecessary exposures due to us constructing the structures. I spoke about the ARD, which is the asbestos-related diseases, how people suffer from that, the 30 to 40 years issue. And unlike most similar diseases which can be avoided, communities that expose asbestos are very poor, with little choices in terms of relocation and the required government intervention. We talk about people here that it's hard to put food on the table. The old age grant which they're getting is actually helping in terms of food security or food supply, but when you talk about them having to do anything to solve their own problems, it is difficult. They can't do it. And hence we really require government intervention. So I spoke about the approval of the plan in 2030 there. And this is the amount of money estimated then in 2012. I just want this slide because I said, let me not calculate it and put it to this term. It might be very scary. Yeah, so it was presented this slide previously in number of, in the portfolio committee as well as in cabinet as well. So at that time in 2012, we were looking at something like about 4 billion, which in today's term is almost like reaching 10 billion now. Now, we developed a 3-year plan because we thought this is a big animal. You need to eat it in chunks. Small, you must start with either with legs or you know, either with head or something like that. So we've got there a total of about 802 kilometers gravel road to be timed. And we put an estimate of about the amount per kilometer there, about 2 million per kilometer. And we need to demolish and rebuild 3 schools. That's a 3-year plan, actually. And all this comes to about, you know, about 2 billion rand to can start to do this work. Now, it's really tough. We need to do some schools as well. We need to pay some traditional council offices. We need to pay some yards of the schools where the Department of Education moved in and built a total asbestos-free new school. But the whole entire yard where kids play during break, it all has asbestos fiber. So we need to pay that those schools. So it's very important, Chair and the members of the committee, to indicate that we have applied to the National Treasury for funding in the Africa. So as we see currently, the National Treasury is sitting with a bid to get some funding so that it can help us in implementing this plan. Progress up to date, in Limpopo, the construction of Mafefe traditional council office is underway. This is one of the heavily affected area, and it's really serving a number of people in the whole Mafefe traditional area. So the construction of that traditional office is currently underway. In the Northern Cape, Piba School has been closed, and the children has been moved to Hamopedi School, and the Pedi Hamopedi School has begun, and the mobile classroom has been constructed for additional children that are from Kiba School. And as well as the clinic has been constructed as well, and consultation with the communities underway. I just got latest now from the our provincial collection department that they are almost finalizing this consultation with the community to identify new site where they will build a new Kiba School. A required document has been prepared, and that's talked to the submission treasury for the funding so that we can start to implement some of the actions that came up from this secondary asbestos remediation plan. And I think our recommendations are just basically two in this regard. One is for the portfolio committee to note progress on the addition of the secondary asbestos remediation plan. But number two, which we really feel strong about is, as a department, is to request portfolio committee to visit all affected areas if possible. That's been a fair thing, so Hamukedi amongst others. To attempt to intensify actually the implementation of this plan. And this would help because as we sit now, As department, yes, we communicate with the technical people. We do sometimes engage with the community at large, but we think the best of the portfolio competence area to give an overview of really what we are doing as government, it will really go a long way in helping us as a department in implementation of this plan. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Paul. Chair, I just want to add some final conclusion and concluding remarks that some of the findings of the study and some of the progress work was taken to a national summit on chemical and land remediation that the minister hosted early in October this year. And we had about 300 delegates from all sectors of society, including asbestos sufferers and the asbestos interest group that was present there from Limpopo. When we concluded the summit, we adopted a set of resolutions that the minister approved, and one of those resolutions, one of 14, I think, resolutions, spoke to the establishment of an asbestos task team. What came up there was the same thing that communities were saying, we hear this, a lot of talk that's been going on, but when do we get action? And so we've established an asbestos action committee with government and the communities there, NGOs and people that have basis of the community at heart. And the idea is that we were going to meet often in those affected areas to just create the awareness. We have issues and challenges here, Chair, that one of the biggest interventions that has to be made in terms of what the plan recommended was the removal and relocation of communities. And in some areas, you're talking hundreds, thousands of people. And, you know, we either declare that a national emergency and move a whole lot of people, and what will be the cost of that, which is what the study is recommending. Second one is temporary relocation, and the other one is in situ treatment. That where the people are living, we can treat, rectify, remediate, rebuild schools, and so forth. One of the issues that came out was to show awareness and taking the people with us. The fact that we don't have money to do things, we don't have enough money to do what we decide to do in terms of relocation, there's a request that the community wants to be made aware of that we must take people with us. Inform them, keep them informed of the challenges and so forth. So that's what we do. Often Dr. Chitangon is often in the community, he lives in Limpopo, we have engagement with the affected communities. And one of the things we were suggesting is that as a recommendation, the portfolio committee and members to consider a visit to these areas. I'm not sure, you know, whether in that way there will be expectations created, but one thing is necessary, and we've seen with the recent situation with education, that we need to keep the engagement going. We need to create the awareness, and we need to keep the people with us in terms of challenges and where we're going with this program. So, Chair, with that, I'd like to conclude. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, there we are. Before they even come in, what will be the mandate of the interministerial committee established in 2015? So that we see, working together with everybody else, how fast can we move on these matters? Because the program that we have highlighted is a program that speaks to what we are doing as the Department of Environmental Affairs. What is everybody else doing? What is the joint program emanating from this interministerial committee? Colleagues, anyone?
Thank you very much, sir. I think you must address what I was to ask. I am deeply worried with this report that is being presented to us. As Section 24 of the Constitution compels the government to ensure that the environment that the people live in is not harmful to their well-being. And I'm really worried because we are just getting this report now. Although it's an interministerial committee, but we should be looking where they are currently. What are they doing? I've heard that they are relocating some of the schools, the affected community as well. But it seems to me it's done in a state case. if it affects the people's lives, it should be our priority. We should have done that long time ago. 2008, the study was done. 2012 was presented to the cabinet, or whoever it was presented to. Actually, there should have been action long time ago. And to that, I don't know what other provinces are doing. I remember I raised this issue of Kosizwene Township, where the half of the township is the roof is asbestos. Some of the roofs with houses were demolished because of this of the hailstorm that occurred in 2008, and they re-roofed the houses with the new kind of technology, not using asbestos. Some of the houses are still are covered with asbestos. I don't know whether that correlates to those houses as well in the other provinces. Thank you very much.
And
Ademanuel.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chair. I think that if you know the status quo of the situation of asbestos overall, especially in the two provinces, Northern Cape and Mpumalanga, Limpopo and Soria, and you are also giving us data around the total number of schools and roads affected and the public spaces. But there will also be concern around the snail case in addressing your own findings. You can't undertake a study, there are findings, you are not even given reasons as to why there was no implementation. Different options. my honorable minister, with due respect, chair, I ask to be protected.
Minister, just keep quiet and sit there. Honorable Mavelo, you are on the platform.
I refuse to be intimidated by the minister, chair. Thank you.
No, you are not intimidated. You are on the platform.
Thank you.
Say your say.
Thank you. Yeah, basically that is the point of departure in terms of my input around that. But with regard to the three options that are given, option three, I don't think we can put a cost to the lives of our people. That is a fundamental flawed approach. Because if we say asbestos is a very dangerous substance, and the best way to eliminate it would be to remove the people where they have been resided. So I think option three for me, the notwithstanding the cost involved, should be the option that we push for. That is by taking out people from the affected areas. But I know asbestos in the country is banned, isn't it, DDG? But still in a number of countries, asbestos is not banned. You still have those who export asbestos, those who import asbestos, and those who produce asbestos. And the World Health Organization has just given its own stats around how many people are dying annually. And the latest stats are those of 2012, how many people worldwide has died. So, Chair, my point would be to say that the department must come up with a progressive approach with short term in order to address the challenges in the two provinces, especially if you talk about the 7 roads. So many people are moving in those roads, so they will be affected. If we only talk about the public spaces where people are there most of the time, and if you mention, like the presenter has mentioned, the place of worship is also affected. So basically there's nowhere to run as far as this problem is concerned. So my own right there would be to say, let's say at least option three, that we remove people from the contaminated areas, and we ensure over a given period of time at least there's visible action around addressing asbestos problem. Lastly, I don't know, but maybe we, I don't think we must punch above our weight, but I think this matter, because we are health conscious, we must try to elevate this problem. While in the short and medium term, we must address the challenges in the country.
but in the long term, we must elevate it to an international level, as we have done well with the other folders where we have interim. But then if we have countries that export it, countries that import it, countries that produce it, countries that consume it, it's a problem, and it will be the developing world that will be affected in this regard. But in the short term, let's focus internally South Africa and address the challenge. Thanks, Chair. But we welcome the attention.
Make it another Nyambi.
Good morning, Minister.
Because all of you are from Northwest. Now we only see the minister. Very much.
I didn't see the minister here in the morning, Chair.
Okay.
Good morning, Chair. Would asbestos fibers degrade over time, and how long does it take time? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Greetings to our minister. Chairperson, I just want to know which other countries in the Southern Africa region or in the world suffers from asbestos-related diseases, and also what are they doing in order to cure this disease, and how do they solve this problem? Thank you.
Come here. I knew that you were going to say it. Anyway. Your hand might not be up, but speaking, I know you're going to.
Thanks, Chair. The first, let's applaud the government for having taken a progressive policy direction of banning the asbestos mining and whatever production or manufacturing of all these related products. I think that is a move that was long overdue, and it could only be done by the democratic government. Otherwise, our people will still be suffering, had it not been for the ANC government that saw it fit to be attempted to ban those. So we should appreciate that without it being so hard. Nothing would have happened. But we should proceed to, as well as my colleagues have indicated, be worried about the base upon which we want to redress some of these challenges that are facing our people. So in that particular regard, and in fact, my point is that we're already dealing with a much bigger problem that we have come to realize. You know, because some of these products are just all over in terms of roofing of your houses and so on. They may not necessarily be around where these mines are. It may be almost across the country. And I do know some areas where this has happened. It may be in a smaller state, you know, but we are dealing with a much more bigger problem than have been actually perceived. But be that as it may, I've got two issues I may want to understand. The Interministerial Task Team, which has asked about the overall mandate, but my part will be the dimension that talks to when are they concluding or it's concluding its job. Because at some point, there must be a report coming. It can't be that we've got a team that just work on these issues and not present the report. We must present the report so that we know how to even action that and not just expect the department on its own to be moving. We see we are doing your bit, but this is not a task at a time that you may even think that we'll have concluded this. Even if you get a 10-year period, the possibility of you not concluding in 10 years, if you do it alone, is very high. The second issue, are there any litigations so far? Are we dealing with any such challenges? Because they may even make the cost to be so high than what we think. Or are there anywhere our people can go get the record if they were to claim or share that, because nobody has taken it so much seriously. People are just dying silently, hoping that at some point this will be fine. Or is there anything, particularly compensation specific to the sufferers, not being community kind of projects which are good for everybody, but for the actual people who might have suffered on the basis of those mines, which was going to be at the private center. But in the main, now that they've closed and even ran away, what is it that may be happening? I'm just wanting to understand that. Then, very last chance, the Action Committee. Did you call it the Action Committee? Community, government, everybody. How do you resolve the issues there? If there are to be different kind of challenges where you don't agree, or you form that team thinking that it will always be easy to agree on everything, you go for it as long as you inform people that no, this is how you die, be aware, and so on. I was going to have a problem if I was to be in the team. I appreciate the team. But I'm just saying, obviously, that team can create patience. You know, because you've got people who are suffering, and you've got those who are supposed to resolve the problems, and you've got others who fight for these, or NGOs fighting for their rights, and so tension will develop. And I'm just thinking, when that tension develops in that environment, how do I handle it? And I'm not giving any quick suggestion to say, yes, we need to do it differently. I'm just in charge of the media in a way in which we may want to look at what happens there. But the last part, we can, I think we do welcome the invite to visit the area. As soon as we have got our program clear, it may be necessary that we go see for ourselves what is actually happening so they understand or appreciate this change as is. But obviously, as we arrive, it will raise expectations that things will be resolved quickly or whichever way, but people will then think that we can't just be another country arriving and going and the situation remains the same, you know. Because then there will be hope, you know. As we go there, other than just saying we have just come to see and observe this thing, so the people there, they think government as a whole knows already. They will not think there is still some people ignorant about the challenge. So to them, when we arrive, upon landing, they expect some better responses or movement forward, you know, to say at least this is what we've done. Yes, we can tell that the tribal office is being, but they may be looking for much more than just the tribal office. If you are in the group or if you are in the northern city, they will be looking at other measures. I'm just saying, sir, we will continue to look at what it means, our vision, but I think the vision may need to be done. Yes.
Mr. Peter, there's a less certain moment that I did not, because I was with you in another meeting, so you are most welcome. So just for your benefit, Minister, as well, we have raised this issue with colleagues in the department last week. This matter of asbestos remediation in the context of the heaps and heaps of mountains and the hills and what you call those rubbish dumps, mine dumps that are all over the country and causing havoc to the lives of our people. So that as we respond to this, we also have a holistic response. You know, some of us who are from areas like Emalas, there are dumps and dumps almost everywhere. Come windy days, lives there are just terrible. But again, if we don't come with a plan, these are matters that have been raised by NGOs, they've been raised by communities with us, and that's why we raise them with the department. including these issues of asbestos. That's why our residents, because they raise them when we go to these oversight visits. But we don't raise them because our people have risen. We ourselves live in those communities. So what at government wide level are our action plans to deal with mine dumps? Immediate, medium term and long term. So that, you know, when you go back to where you come from, Minister, at least you should be able to say, this is what we're doing now to deal with this. I'm raising this so that as we discuss this, we discuss it holistically. That indeed some of the particles that we are talking to are particles that come from mine dumps that are indeed not benefiting the well-being of our people, adverse to the instructions that the Constitution gives us. That's one. But two, I've deliberately asked before you came, Minister, what is the mandate of the Interministerial Committee on this matter? Because the picture that you have painted, Mark and the team, is not a nice one. Not a nice one at all. And our response does not fit the enormity of the picture that you have painted. Issues of houses, issues that are affected, issues of roads that are affected, issues of clinics, schools, houses or places of worship. Now, relative to the picture that we have, what is our response to the broader issue that, apart from what we understand what we are doing in the department, but because indeed you are not Minister of Roads, not Minister of Schools, we would expect that there should be some responsibility that resides with those relevant ministries in relation to this other matter. So that it is not your issue. No wonder then that an interministerial committee has been formed. So that we put together resources, we put together our heads, we deal with this matter that affects our people. I agree with colleagues that perhaps even the sum that we have that talk about 10 billion, as we speak now, we'll be talking something about what, 12 or so billion. If you were to attend to all. But out of that, how much do we, as a government-wide level, do we have to deal with this matter? Now, you know, Minister, that we had a big problem last week. A problem that all of us supported. We fully supported, including our government. That's why we hate the intervention of the president on the matter of the student fees. Here are other matters that we need to be seen to be responsive to. Matters that indeed affect the health and well-being of our people. So that we are not seen to have researched and only stopped at the level of research. And only have a few projects that we are taking forward as the Department of Environmental Affairs. So, and I agree with comrades that with colleagues, these are comrades, they are comrades somewhere. I agree with them that the pace of our movement on this is not satisfying. Is not satisfying. We think we need to do more. Well, let's hear your response.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, colleagues. My very sincere apologies for arriving after you had started. I went to the other strategy meeting after the first message. That's the NGO people that are answering questions there today. Let me start by just speaking to broad issues about this asbestos matter. Maybe before I do that, I must just talk to the a few things that I noticed on the slide presentation that left us before we could deal with it. If we go to the last slide, on the progress made, remediation, secondary asbestos, the group last in the press required documents have been prepared and submitted to Treasury to secure funding for implementation of secondary asbestos remediation. Now, you refer to a problem that we experienced last week. We all know that we are functioning within the situation where the financial status of the world, countries of the world, is not quite so good. And therefore, to find in a treasury submission of this nature money to the tune of 10 billion rand over a period of what we see giving ourselves was 10 years. I also think that we must expand that 10 years and make it shorter as you see. Is a problem. You see, I think, and I've been saying to this, the colleagues in the department, I don't know why we insist on taking this approach. So in front of you, all of you today, I'm not going to hold on and go back into the dark room and say this today. Let's put the first option here today. And that first option is not being put here today. We have long agreed about that approach. And that approach is to ensure that we prioritize whatever funding is there. Because, Chair, my colleague who doesn't want to refuse to be in Tunisia, in Northern Cape, they build schools every year. There's Asidi School, we have just completed the number 100 school of Asidi. What makes us not to take number 57, 58, 59, 70, 71 school and rebuild the schools that were built on asbestos? And then finish them. Number 71 has on a new school. That's elsewhere. What makes us unable to do that? I'll tell you something. This approach of ours is what causes the delay, to be frank. And this is the approach that I said we must expand, if not put it at last. We must put a approach that says prioritize, a CD prioritize. Turn and take those roads every year. By the way, the schools, the asbestos is in schools, where the fire is ascending out. Is in roads, where the roads which we are using almost every now and then. As we prioritize that road, you know, we are going to see that village. We will be dealing with that hard at the same time and forget that we ever had asbestos. Because if you're in front of Turner and say, we have been allocated money for ACD schools, acceleration of development of schools, and then somebody arrives later and say, we want money for school now for asbestos. I mean, that's not planning. That's honestly not planning. Nobody will give you that money. So the document that is going there is going to delay really, really. So we can take our hand, to be honest. And friends. So with us colleagues, the teams must go and sit down and do what they say, sit down. Then we will finish the school. It's the same way as this cyber commission, many comes from what is the green fund, something, and some of it comes from the department of whatever and so forth. Those departments in our interdepartmental meeting, that's where we should be discussing the same issues. Okay, let's prioritize and give it. We'll finish this thing before 10 years. I think. But I think it's because we are looking for money. Let's be frank. And that money is not going to come as long as this approach is like this. I therefore want to submit that we are subjecting ourselves and we must subject ourselves to that. The IMP has been established just a few months ago, about 2 months ago. The Interdepartmental Committee has been sitting. That's all other departments. The former IMC, or there's been coordination between two departments only, human settlements and DIA, then he has to go back to cabinet. I'll come there, so to be those law. I'll come back later to just talk about where the settlements fitted in then and where it has now been lost. It's because of the things we are reading here today again. So the IMC has been set up, we will be calling that IMC, and these are the things we are going to be stressing on. The colleagues give us your priority programs, where are you building schools? In Northern Cape, as we do, let's break that school as well. Northern Cape is already really trying, to be honest. Because they actually moved this school from her, the land from her Mubeji, from Kiba to her Mubeji, and they are now constructing school. This is what I'll say my colleagues should have. So, that's the best thing. We will definitely undertake to put that matter on the IMC agenda to prioritize. Because before we know it, we shall have eaten this elephant in chunks and finished it. And the chunks will be so quick every year that we will actually have to. It's unlike having to wait and wait for money, and which doesn't come, and then the longer you wait for money, that doesn't come in the form that you want it. Whether there's money which you can use, there are many ways of skinning a cat. That's skinning a cat differently. So I'm trying to say that let's, for today, expand that touch or put it a little bit down and put the prioritization of funding that's existing in the Department of State. That's the decision we have in the department. This other one is new. Number two, Chair, asbestos has been banned. It's also a response to the question. Asbestos has been banned in South Africa, and I think, again, thanks to democratically speaking, and democratic government started banning this asbestos only after 1994. This democratic dispensation. We must not stop saying that. Having said that, we should say that, and this is where human settlement comes in. We went back and were directed by CADET to say, because CADET had taken the decision that we must calculate the amount of and the number of human settlements that require refurbishing of asbestos roofs and so on, whether it affects people. When we came back and looked at the actual banning order, Mark and Tim would say this as well. It actually bans the production manufacturing and production of asbestos. You know, the treated asbestos, like in the roof sheets and so forth, is not dangerous. It fills. Where it starts becoming dangerous is when they break, as they start removing the roof. It's like the process, the challenge we have in Chami municipality, currently. You remember the storms there that actually damaged people's houses and so forth. Now, they removed those roofs. And the banning order, what is expected in terms of the banning order, says, although that's not banned now, the fragmented and the use of it as it is. In other words, not like that and not quite legal as it is. But the use of that, even though it's not banned, as in that form as it's treated, whenever you remove it, you have to report and follow procedure that actually allows this department to work with you through the inspectorate and whoever to dispose it and treat it properly. So that part of the rule doesn't seem to be known by many people. And I think this is probably for us here as collectively to actually emphasize and popularize that rule, because we discovered that even Tshwane did not quite, were not aware that they had to call us in to say that now that we are removing these things, let's see how it we have to treat this. So that's the part that I thought that we should also just, in response to the question about the banning order and how human settlement was removed, because human settlement department then no longer needs to go and do inspection and calculation, quantification or whatever, as long as the things are still removed, as soon as they are. It's just now popularization of when they move. When whoever owns a house like this, if they do away with that thing, they must talk to us. So that's why they are no longer part of the bigger picture in the ministerial committee issue. The holistic picture, okay, as you raise this, I thought I should speak to it. There are three large components of mining pollution, if you like, that we are dealing with. This is one of them, and this is actually called secondary asbestos remediation program. Now the secondary is after mining. The primary would be where mining has taken place. So there is another program that I think when we come to you next time, we should actually report not as a department, but report as an interdepartmental commission. Because the DT that's led by GMR, that's working on the rehabilitation of the mine dumps, does deal with those primary issues. What are they doing in the primary issues? They are rehabilitating the mine dumps. We are working with them as their lead, as their lead in that part. We lead in the sense that we actually have to determine standards. Standards, I mean, the it's not that a given that for you to have to say that you have rehabilitated a mine is when you have arrived with 5 Matipa trucks and remove the rubble and then bring the broom and sweep and then bring a lawn and plant. Because there are toxicities there. So we've got to say to you, what are the standards of a rehabilitated mine? What constitutes a rehabilitated mine? And therefore, that's the role of DIA. So even though the Minister of Minerals has a final say in allowing a mine to close, because they are the ones who give the closure certificate, they must have satisfied us as well from the point of view of the standards that we actually have. They have met the standard, whoever has met the standard when a mine is getting closed. But now they are also rehabilitating. I'm sure we all see as we fly into Gauteng that now they are removing those mine dumps somewhere in the town area, town, the town plaza and so forth. There are now new shops and so forth. You see, mines have actually been moved in Northwest, in other parts of the country as well. They are gradually beginning to. What are the reasons and what is the driving force? We get to know that what drives that issue is because is the fact that there are now new technologies that have been found by the world. Where some of these mining, where heavy mines were this thing, you will find that some particles of gold, diamond, whatever, may have been falling out because the technology that they were using at the time was different. Now they found technology to shift, we call it above ground mining. So they re-mining anew from the mines themselves. So this is exactly why you see all of a sudden there's a faster movement to do that. However, there is, in terms of our law, an expectation that every mining house, which operated everywhere else, will then close as they close the mine, rehabilitate that mine going forward. The problem is retrospective application of the law. That is what, because people argue in court that, in South Africa, that at a time when that particular action was taken, there was no law that prohibited that person. Probably that person would not have entered into that kind of action. It was law prohibited. So the retrospective application of the law has been a problem. But however, some lawyers, like led by Richard Stewart, has challenged this matter, followed through. The trial were held outside of Africa. I think that's a fortunate thing. And therefore, the cases where one are coming to rehabilitation and compensation fees and so forth, every time the cases were taken on behalf of people in Northern Cape, parts of Northwest, the human areas, the one we're seeing bad cases that we're working with. Those cases were won. Compensation was agreed upon. Money was paid for the workers as well. Workers. No. There are people in community that I know, that they might be, one of them is a joke or righteous of record. Who bought a whole ship for his dog and tried to and gave the dog before I die and just didn't drink the ship. Die with a whole lot of stuff of money. Die they die, but at least they have that money. I don't know, it's not a nice thing at all. So that compensation was done at the time. I'm not sure if at the time when community members were not involved, why it would not have been involved, but my understanding is that money was shared amongst those who were recorded to be sued for by those lawyers, and then it was distributed. I'm not aware. I think we can find out whether there's an ongoing compensation or paying off over time. I doubt, because otherwise you would have been under that the commercial construction of the lawyer would be known. Yeah. Yeah. So my understanding is that it was this written was shared among those who at least at the time were affected. The problem is those who are affected post. Now those who are coming across the hall because you are in a class who were exposed and said. By the way, let's also understand that scientifically they do say that it does affect you when it's in a particular, I think, particular manner. You will just talk about it scientifically. When it's the threat is, I think it's not, the size and whatever, when it has a shortness of, the more shorter it becomes, the more you easily get it. So even that has got to do with how that threat looks like, where she is. Meaning that it becomes much more dangerous on road. Is it a viable option to move the people from those villages? We know, colleagues, that the democratic dispensation is just not possible because of our laws. We say to people who arrive, move from here. Let me tell you with an example. There's a community that we find, and this is a separate one. It's also related to mining, by the way. We go and sleep today, there's a house that's standing there in Merako. Tomorrow that house is sunk. It's no longer on the ground. It's sunk with people last night. Underground. Yeah. Because of the people which there. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go there now. Try and talk to the people. I've been, I don't know how many times. Please, let's remove you from here. We're taking you there. Hey, our goggles have been here forever and ever. It won't happen to, yeah. So it really is a bit of a challenge. It does happen when we're building some stuff, we are compensating, we are removing people, but it's not quite an easy thing. So this option was taken, if you look at it, it does say that it has a critical go to. It has two components. It says, in this regard, minimal or no remediation will be applicable. Minimal remediation will be applicable, but will be case-specific. Where there are real dangers and threats, it means that there will be less attention to it. It's not as if we say leave it as it is. And then, however, this is dependent on whether, and then regarded to the motion, we are saying this is regarded, because you're treating the business, which is much more affected. Like, for instance, if it's affecting the roads, you're rebuilding your roads. And then removing, up to real standards, and then getting the people to do that. Where there's real impact, and then dealing with that particular issue. So that's why we thought that, and as I said, at least upon discussion at a cabinet level, I thought that do nothing is not an issue, it's not possible. And then this, okay, what's called temporal, by the way, temporary relocation.
Yeah.
Temporary is something else. In this regard, there will be a need for temporary relocation, where there's a need like a school, a good school as well. So there are those three options, but we think the second option is a better option, which is the option that we're applying. Just that I agree, we must implement it faster by reprioritizing and reprioritizing it. I am confident we can make it even before 10 years, if we are close to the future. Thank you. That's
as bachelor's
degree, I think they can.
Thanks, Mr. Good morning as well. I think Mr. has answered most of the questions. The one that we want to ask is, what other countries is mining for special cell allowed? And I think the minister has also answered the litigation one. So I know it's Zimbabwe that comes to mind, but
it's true. What we have is Zimbabwe that still can't be mining. Asbestos. Some of the world countries, Pakistan, they're still, and quite a number of some other countries in Europe, they are advancing that. They must keep on mining asbestos. We had a meeting here this year in March in Geneva, where really those countries were moving this point forward in our meeting, and we have been interacting with them. On the question of litigation, we haven't got any litigation so far that relates to secondary asbestos contamination. The question around whether asbestos fibers degrade, yes, it does, but it depends on what type of asbestos fiber is that, and that forms part of the treatment. So we have if you want to see us here putting a separate organization with in-situ remediation. In-situ remediation means doing a number of things. Either it's treatment. In this regard, the chrysotile asbestos fiber, you can treat it using what we call oxalic acid with alpha power sound. So in that way, you can degrade it. But it's a treatment option. So there's a number of treatment options that are available. So depending on where we are, if treatment is an option, obviously then we will then look at what technology can we use at that specific site. Thank you.
But one last thing I think that we need to deal with, internationalize the discussion. Internationalize the discussion. We have two NEAs where we are dealing with these issues of chemical asbestos. Basel Convention, Rotterdam. Yeah. And Stockholm, where there's a discussion about this particular the chemicals that are banned that should not be allowed to. You remember part of the work that you did about not allowing movement into certain countries like ours and so forth. So there's an ongoing discussion, however, of how asbestos should really continue to be banned as well as other, but the use of other chemicals as well. But we do think that. Those discussions will actually yield further results as we discuss at the international level, because you can't rightfully show just keep discussing and banning when our neighbor is actually producing and sometimes going via us to export some places and so forth. Yeah. So there's got to be internationalization of those discussions.
Just thanks. The one from Honorable Marco Bella on the Action Committee. And I think that the purpose there was that this Action Committee is an NGO funded internationally, and they've been representing the interests of the community. We have good relations with them, and I hear your concerns around, you know, are we elevating the tensions or what. I think it's a conduit for us to actually get to the community in terms of relaying progress. And to date, we haven't encountered really anything else except that we just, all they want to know is that tell us what's happening. And that's really the plan there. Chair, the other aspect which the Minister touched on is that the dealing with the roof sheets that comes up, there's a compliance regime. There are companies that have to be registered that have to comply with a certain norm on how to treat those roof sheets. So they disinfect it on site and they remove it under very, very strict conditions. They have to be sealed, covered, plastic wrapped, everything, and they can only be accepted in a hazardous landfill site, a licensed site, which we have in South Africa. So there's a strict procedure on how that is done. Lastly, I just want to touch that, you know, while we are prioritizing the funding and all of that, we've gone to Treasury, we've presented the case, it was considered in the medium-term budget prioritization. As a department, we are continuing with the little money that we've got on a demonstration, pilot type of interventions on dealing with some of the schools and playgrounds and things like that, where we think we can make an immediate intervention. At the same time, companies from abroad have come to talk to us around triple P type of approaches for big money like this, where a public-private partnership can be established, where companies come in a big way to rehabilitate in a big way. So these are major engineering type of solutions to deal with, as secondary asbestos contamination. We've also presented that to Treasury. So there's a process that's happening there. We don't have all the details around that, and so that's going to be a longer-term plan in terms of how to deal with it. But as Minister said, we are confident that through the IGTTTE, the Intergovernmental Task Scheme, Provincial Roads, Department of Transport, UN Settlement, Basic Education, and Department of Health, all of them have given and they've committed to the priorities. And just fast-tracking that and making sure that it happens in terms of on-the-ground action.
So, I've mentioned the two elements of a holistic picture that you asked for. I mentioned two. The third one is dealing with the acid mine drainage. So that's also where you find it usually. Because the acid mine drainage is simply what happens underground in a mine that's diseased, where there's a mixture of water, oxygen, and heavy metals. Those three things combined form heavy, heavy thick thing that's now called acid mine drainage. When the water rises in underground, it goes up and up and up, it ingresses, and then those heavy metals or the acid mine drainage flows into our earth. So they say when it's decanting. So to stop it at levels of decanting, the Department of Sanitation, there is a function. So there are three departments that lead on any of the three legs. But like DMR leads on mining, rehabilitation, the dams. Gear is there, water is, and sanitation is there, as a role player. Even where we are in the asbestos, the two are there. Even when the water and sanitation lead a ship on the mine drainage, we are there. So it's all the same departments that play an interdepartmental team. That's why I'm saying, whether we come to this portfolio committee or we go to the water and sanitation, we should try, next time I am suggesting that we get the holistic picture from the teams that are working together of interdepartmental. There should be the continuous approach of the nature.
That I was going to suggest that indeed we are worried. At least when we have some sense of what we're doing as a chemical on this matter that you have raised, Minister, on mine drainage, on the dams, and indeed on asbestos. But of course, asbestos, you have given us this background of what happened and what are we doing. But again, even in terms of asbestos, the matter that you have raised, Minister, where within the existing framework, we can tackle some of this, we agree with you. And it could be faster. And whatever monies we get, not from anywhere, those monies can come within a framework that we have established. That deals with, we are building roads every day, we are building schools every day, we are building houses every day. Why within the work of government can't we tackle this matter? And we will agree with the minister. Hopefully when we have met the IMC and concretized this, we might even come with even less timelines to deal with these matters that are before us. Then when you have, maybe it might be important that we meet with the two portfolio committees, one on sanitation and the one on DNA, so that we discuss with the portfolio committee before we call them, so that when we call you, all of us are there. Because all these matters are cross-cutting, and we deal with all of them once and for all. Yeah. And then you can then bring the action team, intergovernmental task team, to speak to all of us on these matters. But,
thank you, Chair. I would like to make a suggestion. We could reach on our recommendation of DCRR as one of the things that we want to be a priority and put it on our DCRR as a recommendation to Parliament. And that's what we said.
No, I'm not sure we're going to deal with the DCRR. It's another matter that is coming. If you want to put this on the DCRR, plus by all means, as a recommendation, I don't think that it will be problematic. To say, anyway, it's something that, you know, colleagues, ministers, something else, that there is nothing as terrible as seeing people suffering from the same issue, dying day in and day out, and you can't answer as a public. There is nothing as sickening as that. So I think we are getting there now. And so that our interaction with our government must be an interaction that says, government, we think you can, oh, what are you doing, first of all, because we might not know. There are certain things that might be happening at government level, and we might not have asked. But when we have interacted with our government, we are then able to go to any, by the way, we have a meeting at 1 o'clock today. That is not a free lunch now. That lunch is from environmental NGOs. And I know many of them are going to ask us about the mine dams that they took us to, about the acid mine drainage that they took us to. So, but when we deal with these issues, we are dealing with what really affects our people directly. I think Colis and the Minister, thanks for the response. We will then take the matter forward in the manner suggested. The next item, colleagues, and I think I also agree with you, Pwane, that indeed in our, because we touched in the report of the DCCR, by the way, we touched on this matter, but we don't have a recommendation. We don't have a recommendation of how do we move forward. So when we deal with the DCCR today, we can then make a recommendation. Minister and colleagues, Mark, we agreed that you will then brief us on the economy. I don't know what you call it. I don't know what exactly is the name of this economy, but it's still an economy. Well, like wildlife or biodiversity, whatever you call it, we leave that to you. Moscow, from Moscow with love. Mark, the minister, the ball is now in your court on the second matter, wildlife economy. We raised the matter, Minister, by the way, that as we interact with this matter of the wildlife economy, we must not be blind to history lessons. And history lessons tell us that many majority of South Africans have not benefited from this economy. And in our view, they are still not benefiting. And again, as public reps, we need to know what are you doing so that all South Africans, as we say in the Freedom Charter, that this country belongs to all who live in it, the same should apply to the economy of this country, including the biodiversity economy. With those words, I hand over to whoever is presenting. Is it you, Moshe?
It's more so a chair. Yes, but I will just introduce the matter. You are aware that South Africa is the third most biologically diverse country in the world after Brazil and Indonesia. And we have been at the center of global efforts to conserve biodiversity. We are the only country in the world to have an entire plant kingdom within the confines of a single country. Other plant kingdoms cut across various countries, and that is the King Floral Kingdom. And in terms of valuation studies, this kingdom, for example, is worth 10 billion rand to the South African economy. And even if you look at other areas, there are many benefits to this biodiversity. For example, a large proportion of the population of South Africa directly depends upon biological resources for their subsystems, including, for example, through activities such as harvesting of plants, herding of animals, food, medicine, shelter, fuel. The list is endless, Chair. And this biodiversity also provides important buffers against climate change, against poverty, and there are quite a number of opportunities for self-employment as well, in addition to it providing areas for recreation, relaxation, as well as the celebration of our heritage. The most comprehensive valuation study has indicated that our biodiversity, for example, is valued collectively at 73 billion rands, which is about 7% of the GDP of the country. And if you look just at tourism, more than 60% of the tourism industry is dependent on ecotourism, which is your biodiversity-based tourism. However, Chair, as you have indicated, we are faced with a case where we have inherent and underutilized economic potential of this biodiversity. And despite the existence of legislation, both at a local level as well as at an international level, because we're signatory, for example, to the Convention on Biological Diversity, which has agreed on what is called the Nagoya Protocol
which promotes issues of address and benefit sharing. However, the industry is still not transformed, and it is not representative of the country's demographics, and therefore benefits are not shared equally. So we then realized that we needed a framework to redress these imbalances of the past. So for us, we have developed a draft strategy that Moscow is going to talk to, which we believe is a game changer for us. It's aligned to the National Development Plan, and its overall objective is to optimize economic benefits of biodiversity for all. Chair, having said that, I'll then hand over to Moscow to take us through the presentation.
See, I'm answering the principal, and I am principal. Now, let's hand over to you, Minister, because before, at the end, okay, now.
Last week, Friday, indeed, you mentioned the issue of this biodiversity economy, and you indicated that is it the same thing as wildlife economy? Members would recall now we are talking about the oceans economy. It is an emerging economy which is being escalated in terms of its potential benefits. Similarly, what used to be called wildlife economy, in fact, has transformed into what is now called biodiversity economy. And that recognition really stems from the fact that we are no more talking about only the animal side of this economy. We have now included the plant side, hence a broader terminology of biodiversity instead of just wildlife economy. I thought I should clarify that evolution of terminology to this stage. You could say, Chair, that we are now competing with ocean economy as biodiversity economy. I would like to also give a context that while our department has always been a conservation department, there's been recognition now that the richness that of our biodiversity that Skumza has talked about and Chair has also talked about last week has prompted us to say we need to do something about this richness that we are always touting. For that reason then, the department felt the need to establish a new unit called Biodiversity Economy and Sustainable Use Unit. And when a decision was made that we need to now contextualize and develop a plan forward for this biodiversity economy, we looked around and it was very difficult to find information anywhere, baseline information, if you like. Where do we start? Where is the information? Because of that, we then commissioned several studies to find out what is the current situation with this economy so that we can use that as a baseline to develop a way forward.
two case studies were developed, were undertaken, a situation analysis of the key sectors of this economy, picking largely on the two main industries of this economy, which is bio prospecting industry and the wildlife industry. So we got to understand where things stand about a year ago. And as was expected, the industry, both industries are extremely untransformed. They are thriving, but they are untransformed. Along with that study, we also did study on what we call the market sizing of the economy, what is the size of this economy. So those state of play reports gave us a bit of sense of what is the baseline and how then do we proceed to reorganize this biodiversity economy. I'd like members to, honorable members, to recognize the space that we operate in, as depicted by this slide. When we are saying we need a way forward in terms of further growing this economy and transforming it, we have to deal with all of these issues at the same time. We have to deal with issues of benefit sharing. We need to, in some instances, relook at our policy and legislation, whether they will support this new vision. We have to talk to issues of traditional knowledge of our communities, which, by the way, has always been exploited by those who are commercializing some of our indigenous species. We have to address issues of equity and benefit sharing. We need to pay attention to the issues of transboundary trade, which is happening now between South Africa, Zimbabwe, Botswana. There is trade happening. So as we develop this way forward, we need to take cognizance of this maze of issues that we have to deal with at the same time as we chart a way forward. I'd like to talk about this slide. This slide shows two graphs. These two graphs are talking about the two key industries that we have targeted within biodiversity economy. The top graph is telling us, as you can see, honorable members, it starts from 2008 and it goes up to 2030. This is, it talks about two things. The current situation, the blue line, tells us where we are now. In terms of the bio-prospecting and bio-trade industry,
your standard, that slide.
This slide was put in right at the end, so just as a point of emphasis, I will change. But it tells a story about where we come from, where we are. We are around 2015 now. That blue line says, in terms of the plant side of this economy, we are sitting at around 1.5 billion rands of what is generated by the bio-trade, bio-prospecting industry alone. And all these figures stem from the studies that we've done. Now, the yellow line, let me start with the bottom line. While our economy has been experiencing an up and down movement, the world economy has been rattled in the last while. This is one economy which has consistently been showing growth, this biodiversity economy. That blue line extending to the bottom line says this economy will continue growing. It is currently growing at an average of 6%. It has been for the last year on year growing at that rate. And if we do nothing about this economy, we leave things as they are right now, it will continue to grow. That the blue line will continue to extend. By 2030, we would have experienced that much growth of something in the region of close to 2 billion rands within the bio-prospecting industry alone. Now, if we intervene right now, we are likely going to ensure a much higher growth. That middle line shows the minimum growth that we can expect if we intervene right now. And by intervention, I mean addressing two key areas. Supporting the currency growing industry, but then in a transformative manner. Now, the top line on the graph shows us the maximum potential it can grow up to, depending on the nature of our intervention at the moment. So this graph is telling that story about where we are and where we can potentially go based on what we do. On that basis, the development of the biodiversity economy strategy kicked in with this potential in mind. The bottom graph tells the same story, but about the wildlife industry, the animal side of things. So we can here see that this is a very tenacious, robust economy. While we have not been paying attention to it, it has been growing on its own. But the key challenge is only a few people took it for themselves. And that has been the current state of affairs. So an intervention is needed then. You could take the secret or not. It's been a secret for a while. So we are saying our intervention is that yellow line, that yellow line there, the red one. You see, that's where we need to intervene if we're going to intervene. And that means we need to intervene through this draft biodiversity economy strategy and transform this economy. That's how we intervene. Similarly, the same applies to the wildlife sector and associated industries. So how are we going to take this forward? Well, first of all, we want to align ourselves with existing priorities and with existing interventions. We all know that there are presidential poverty notes. The Department of Rural Development Land Reform also has priority districts. Now, we said we need to align our interventions with those type of priorities. So we essentially took the presidential poverty notes and the Department of Rural Development priority districts, and we overlapped them to develop what we call biodiversity economy transformation notes. Now, we have identified as a start five urban biodiversity economy nodes and 13 rural nodes. But that does not by any means say we are excluding districts that are not identified. It does not mean that. It simply says that's where we will start for reasons that there are currently activities happening there which can help us to escalate our interventions faster. But at the same time, we will be very much optimistic about what happens elsewhere in the country. And we will take that forward as part and parcel of this strategy. So the goal of this strategy is saying by 2030, this biodiversity economy, we needed to achieve an inclusive annual GDP growth rate of 10%. We'd like to move it from the average 6% that has been realizing on year and escalated to about 10% between now and 2030. Why 2030? Because we would like to align it with the timelines of the National Development Plan. So, Chair, that's the sort of national point of intervention, district-wise, if you like. So, those urban transformation nodes, when one studies them closely, you'll find that that's where we have some of the industries, well-established industries, particularly in the bioprospecting industries. That's where you find processing plants and so forth, where the creams and the medicines are actually manufactured. We need to piggyback on that, but we also need to align and piggyback on the Department of Rural Development AgriPax initiatives that are underway. So what do we want to get out of the strategy? What is the strategy going to deliver? We talked about the goal and the timeline for that. It's 2030. We are saying by 2030, in terms of
this key bioprospecting industry, we would like to realize the following targets. We'd like to expand this sector, the bioprospecting sector, by cultivating at least 500 hectares every year of indigenous species which are utilized to develop natural products. We believe if we engage in cultivation of 500 hectares a year, within a period of 30 years, we would have made a lot of strides in terms of new entrants into the industry, participating in those new initiatives. Secondly, we are talking to jobs. We are saying by 2030, up to 50% of bioprospecting products developed in the country, we'd like to see community involvement in those, in terms of jobs. Up to 50% of the products that have been developed, we would like to see communities participating in that supply chain. We are also talking about equity as a target. We're saying they are targeting an equity of 500 million rands between now and 2030. And that should actually address issues of product development and sales by small and medium enterprises, but also something in the region of 200 million rands on fixed assets and infrastructure, key infrastructure to unlocking the market for new entrants. We would like to consider and engage on developing very strategic national facilities such as the National Repository of Natural Products, what we have come to term now the South African Biodiversity Market Bank. I'd like to just spend a moment to try and explain that very simply. We have challenges in the country, like many other countries, with rich biodiversity. One of the key challenges is biopiracy. We have a lot of companies, and especially from big pharmaceutical companies, coming into our country and going through our country and collecting land samples, take them out through our ports, and exploring development of new drugs. That is a problem, because then when they succeed, then the drugs are sold at high prices, and the country or no one in the country gets to share in the benefits of that development of these drugs based on our indigenous materials. So we are saying that bioparacy is a big one. It needs to be addressed. But at the same time, we need to address and escalate research and development for drug discovery ourselves as a country. We have the goods. We need to move towards exploring development of new drugs ourselves. The one facility that can help us to overcome the bioparish problems and help us to get into research and development to make sure that even material that is being utilized, our community's traditional knowledge is acknowledged and fair and equitable sharing of benefits in place. We need to control the space as a factor. Now, other countries, peer countries, have moved with space. They have set up these strategic facilities. There's less biopiracy, there's more channeled and controlled drug development processes monitored by governments, and benefits are flowing into the country. We need to explore this. Brazil has this. China has 10 of these facilities throughout China. Our peer countries, South Korea has this. India has these facilities. We are a member of the BRICS. We are a partner in ever so many MEAs. We need to explore this as a country. We cannot do without this in the medium term. So this strategy is advocating establishment of such very strategic national facilities that will safeguard our genetic material and lead us to compete competitively with the rest of the world. So what about target for the wildlife industry then? A lot of our communities have and continue to acquire land through the land farm processes. Many of them acquire lands which are at the time very active in terms of wildlife tourism activities and so forth.
we need to work with these communities who have acquired land, sir, and make sure that this land that many communities have today actually get into proper production in terms of nature-based activities, ecotourism, wildlife breeding, hunting, professional hunting, and so forth. For the time period of the strategy, we are targeting 2 million hectares of this communal land for restoration and development into commercial activities. Second, we are also targeting a number of jobs, around 50,000 jobs. We'd like to realize this between now and 2030. We want to address the issue of this delta in equity. We need communities and previously disadvantaged people to start to acquire equity in the biodiversity economy. We're targeting 7 billion rand in the next 14 to 15 years. 4 billion in game itself and 3 billion in the assets and infrastructure. But these things will be worthless if handed over without proper empowerment, such as skills development. We need to ensure proper entrepreneurial skills are in place. We need to reorganize the way we, as supporters of new interventions, are arranged, government departments, the private sector. We need new institutional arrangements to make all of this work. We'd like to see, Chair, at the end of 2030, around 300,000 of heads of game being owned by communities and black entrepreneurs in the country as part and parcel of transformation. These are the targets that we have in order for us to be held accountable on, in order for us to report on between now and 2030. These targets have been broadly touted and broadcast. I know Minister talked about these targets at the last World Cup Congress. So the international community is looking at us in terms of these targets. SADC is looking at us. And very soon, we would have to start talking regionally with our partners in SADC because of transboundary trade, which is currently happening whether we like it or not. We might as well be able to control it. Those are the targets for those two key industries today. So in terms of progress on where we are, I decided to just put this up to show where we come from. First, we developed the concept for this strategy. We then went across the length and breadth of the country to get a buy-in, if you like, of all key stakeholders about the concept of developing a strategy for this economy, which is problematic in terms of its makeup. So we spent a lot of time going through provinces and having community meetings and other stakeholder engagement. We then sought expertise to assist us to develop the strategy between 2013 and well into a little bit of 2015. And then we said, this must be a national strategy. It must not by any means be seen as a DS strategy. We said, DG, ask provinces, each province to give us two people to become part of a collective, a national collective, to develop this. And that team of provincial representatives, DEA and private sector representatives, is still in existence now, still at work. But so, the point I'm making is that the strategy was a collective effort by provinces, by the industry, and DEA, of course. We then had a number of national stakeholder consultation processes. I can't even say how many, but there was a whole number of them. Following that, beginning of this year, we had intergovernmental approval processes of the draft strategy from the level of working groups up to the level of min-max. Then following min-max, Minister decided that she wants to take the strategy, take it before Cabinet as a draft, and Cabinet pronounced that it's a document that should be published for public comment. At the moment, we are in that stage of public comment. It's been collected on the 9th of October. That period will expire on the 19th of November.
following this period of further comments being solicited here by all stakeholders once again, because we really want to be sure that proper consultation has been done. So we've done a number of rounds of stakeholder consultation. We will work in, assess, analyze, and work in the new comments perhaps that may come up into the final documents. And that final document will be launched at some point officially. And what will be left is really an integration process. An integration process with other sister departments in terms of how do we jointly implement the strategy, how do we share resources. That process will follow once we have that final document. We need to implement as soon as possible, and we will monitor and evaluate the not only the outputs, but the impact of the strategy on an annual basis. It will be monitored by all parties concerned. So, Chair, the date, while we are developing the strategy, we are not saying we're not going to do anything until the strategy is finalized. There are quick wins. A number of community projects have been identified, and we're working with those community projects to take them forward. DIA as an organization so far has identified about 107 community projects across the country. Just about all of them budgeted for. And we have to implement, honorable members, we can't say to communities, wait until the strategy is done. Communities are crying, the voices are loud. We have to develop a way forward, but we need to implement at the same time all the low-hanging fruit. Honorable members, that's more or less where things stand at the moment. And I've outlined the way forward post-gazetting of the strategy. And we're looking forward to coming back to you at some point to say, here's the final document with all the comments thoroughly consulted. Now we need to move into implementation. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Honorable members.
Thank you very much, Moscow. Minister. Colleagues, you have this presentation from the department. Then let's hear from yourself.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think the last part covers most of the questions that have jotted down while you are presenting. Especially dealing with the low-hanging fruits, because I was more worried of these targets being set for 2030. But he just explained to the portfolio that no, they will be like low-hanging fruits that the department will be capitalizing for the community as they describe. And the other thing that I wanted to ask, have they also done any special biodiversity planning to see, because if you want to create this quick revenue within short space of time, have you considered that some of the species growing in certain climate and conditions can't be used, like taking some certain species to an area where it's very hot and they won't live, they won't survive in those areas? Have you done some special biodiversity special planning as well? Thank you. I think you have covered me.
No, just I think we welcome the presentation. It really gives us progress and hope, because really on Friday, quite the issue, Dr. Moscow, we were very critical around the lack of transformation. And you correctly said you must wait for today. You give us a comprehensive report. So for me, in terms of comments, I think first and foremost, biodiversity economy is mainstreamed and elevated to the required level. That has been our key concern. So that is deeply encouraging, at least as a sense of presence. But one question that I would like to pose, and then another comment, is that one, I'm deeply appreciative of the fact that we will be addressing what we call biodiversity piracy. I'm thinking about a province like the northern region where I come from, which is diverse in terms of biodiversity. There's a stimulant there that was hijacked a couple of years ago. I know the minister is aware of that. It's a indigenous species, but is used to maintain weight. So there is Afghan speaking people. I don't want to say colored, but they call it the kukut. And it has been taken, is now painted, and is sold. No acknowledgement of the indigenous. The people who discovered that, who have been practicing that for years. Maybe if you can comment on that, going forward, but I think your piracy attention is affecting us. The emerging game from PDI, you have not elaborated so much. It has developmental effects. What would be your comment on the emerging game from the PDI, previously disadvantaged individuals? But I think your report is comprehensive. It takes away a lot of comments and questions that I would like to pose. But I'll make a follow-up in the next one. But I'm covered. Thanks very much.
Any other colleague who want to go back?
You get me spoiled to think that even if I don't raise my hand, I'm being pointed anyhow. And one day I'll find my opportunity. But indeed, I think let me raise about three issues. Firstly, just to follow up on what Honorable Mabilo was saying on transformation. To us, especially let's just welcome the whole strategy that is coming, even before it's crafted on our hands. But the fact that there is something in that direction, I think gives some hope that at the end of the day, the people will participate in this biodiversity economy, as we have broadly spoken with. But first long transformation is one thing to talk about the industry not being transformed. It's another to get into the process of transforming. For instance, we are told, even last when we engaged with the department, and when we engaged government, it is said that previously disadvantaged individuals and or communities lack interest in some of these areas. They are not there. Now, I don't think I would want to accept a situation where I was told later on that we went all out but we couldn't find anyone ready to participate in these areas. If it means killing people by hand, ensuring that this happens deliberately, that should be done. I see there's a target in your slide 7 of 300,000 head of wildlife under black in our old ranges. It's a big number, in my view. Whether we'll get that, we are too ambitious, let me put it that way. But to get them, because they're not in existence, it means there must be an effort to ensure. And that is personally, I'm not very much aware of the industry itself. But as I've been saying, that it was a few people who had been doing this kind of business on their own and for themselves, and it's not really open. There's no access to a larger community. Now, to get that community respect and knowing, being aware of what sort of opportunities and so on there are, it needs an effort, and the department may need to come up with ways to put the strategy that would, to some degree, talk to that. And I don't want to give examples, but last week, yes, we had a discussion with the department around the second of issues. So I'm talking about the rather sort of approach to wanting to assist people in that particular regard. The second, also around the biopiracy, the understanding will be like there are laws that prohibit that now. Unless if the understanding is that things happen without any kind of ways of or laws, legislative arrangement to kind of combat this kind of thing happening. But it may, my belief was that it was going to be combated in one way or the other. But you may clarify that part and help in sharing with us as to if that happens on a wider scale around or which sort of species are mostly affected. And so on, so that we get to understand that. But I'm just saying, it may not wait for the strategy. It meant that we needed to have ways of dealing with any illegal issues that are happening. From chair, let me stop there. I've seen most of these reports, of course, which are targeted for. I know it was for our own information later on to just get to understand what's happening. And I think it's this around the urban and rural areas on the districts that are the nodes, economic nodes that we're set to. I'm saying, if there's any opportunity, even on those that have not been identified, we will jump into that space and so on. But the understanding should be that at times such opportunities you may not get to know them easily. Unless there's a way of knowing that. It may be that some awareness of what is happening, what you are doing, and what people may need to take advantage of, it may need to be done. Of course, even through us, wherever we are, as members of parliament, we may want to not make people aware. And I'm just in the department as well. Wherever you are, you may want to talk to these issues to say this is what is happening. The department could be so that people who on their own thing, they have some interest or take initiative, you can jointly assist in that situation and not just leave them to say you are awaiting some sort of opportunities that will come on their own, because they may not necessarily easily come forward. That's it.
Colleagues and the minister, I think this is quite impressive. We can see where we're going. I think from where we're seated, I join my colleagues in congratulating you for having crafted the strategy that has got all our people at the center, so that this economy does not continue to benefit only a blessed white few. It must benefit all of us, but more importantly, communities. So that when we talk about BBEEE, we mean it. And through our strategies, we are able to advance broad-based black economic empowerment. So I think this is most welcome. We will go and read the Gazette. It's good that you brought it. We'll go and read it so that if we ourselves in our little spaces can make any contribution, we'll then also do so. But indeed, this is a step in the right direction. One question though, the nature of the work that you are leading here is economy. Are we having any players in government who are also coming into the fray here? So that we are together, because your work, whilst indeed you must also branch into matters economic, your primary mandate is to ensure that is there in Section 24 of the Constitution. But that does not mean that you can therefore not use the environment sustainably. for the benefit of our people. Therefore, that's why we are making these linkages. But in the crafting of the strategy and everything else, has had the involvement of other people in the economic sector, so that we are speaking broadly as government in the same breath, and we don't have contradictions as we move forward on these matters. But again, from our side, thank you. That's what we wanted you to present, so that we have a sense of where we are as a country. And of course, Minister, you will know, when you brought Pakisa, we said, why were you sleeping on the job? We asked that question. We would ask the same question again. Why were, with the mini party, why were you sleeping on the job? Why were you sleeping on the job? You know, with all these economic possibilities that we have, we had, how many oceans do we have that are surrounding us? Two very big ones. So we're just using them for swimming. And we don't even know how to swim. Until we found economic value. The same would apply here. And but again, thanks that at least we can't say that we have not done anything. There is something on the table now. Though 21 years later, Moscow, 21 years later, we now have a strategy document that is has been published for public comments 21 years later. Well, I think the lesson here is, are we also looking in all other areas in the work that we are involved in? What are possibilities? So that we don't see those possibilities 42 years later. Because our people are hungry. Our people are unemployed. Our people are living in poverty. Inequality continues to be deadly in South Africa. Therefore, wherever we are, particularly those of us who are so fortunate, like myself and these colleagues and minister, we are so fortunate to be sent by our people to represent them at the level of parliament, at the level of the executive. It's our duty to unlock these problems for our people. It's our duty. Therefore, in that context, this is most appreciated. 21 years later. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Perhaps I should start by indeed acknowledging that we are beginning to move 21 years down the line. There have been some efforts previously, province by province. Colleagues would recall the loan schemes issue, the Mafisa, it's a loan scheme Mafisa. Such programs of really trying to empower the TDI, particularly in wildlife. At the time, we, I think, had not even ventured into the space as much as we have done today on the bio-prospecting aspects. I think Skumsha would indicate the Nagoya Protocol was acceded to only last year by Parliament ratified, but we signed our intention a little earlier. I traveled to the UN to deposit our intention to become part of the Nagoya Protocol, the sign off, on the same day, I think, as the EU, the entire EU was doing so. So there's been running efforts even in that space about how do we really, in a practical manner, protect our fauna and flora for utilization, medicinal purposes in particular. And as one of my videos indicated, there's been an exit, lots of pushing up and many others into these, particularly those countries of the EU. But they finally also signed for the Nagoya Protocol. So that's really what they have leveraged to begin to move in that space and now begin to act in a very coordinated manner. Just starting with your question, I think it's important to indicate that, as Dr. Marumu was saying, that there has been quite a lot of coordination with other departments, the provinces, the role players outside government, just engaging on this new biodiversity. Because as you can see, there are some aspects that are not going to be implemented by us as the department. And in that regard, we then need to be together right from the onset as we plan, so that we blend together. This notion of me, Pakisa, I don't know what it is. You either have a Pakisa or no Pakisa. There can't be mini Pakisa. There's no concept in South Africa called mini Pakisa. I'll tell you Moscow now. So they are developing a small concept which they like to bring here. They must, where are we growing it? Because it's not fully developed. We don't know where it comes from. We have in South Africa Operation Pakisa, which is a big fast result. There can be mini big fast result. Because that's the meaning of Pakisa in its fullest sense. So once you mini big fast results, I don't know what that means really. It's a big problem. So that then, Chair, I think helps to really move forward your comments. What I think we're going to request from honourable members, we know that you are public representatives. It is going to be important, therefore, that we really work together in ensuring that the publicity issues, the knowledge information issues through your constituency offices and through various other means is actually disseminated. And as and when we need those role players, because we must, this thing of a black industrialist is not supposed to happen only in manufacturing, even in the space. And that's how we view it. So it is a market, and it is a thing that has got to happen to our rural people, in particular, not rural people, people residing in rural spaces must really benefit. Because, I mean, we've had the operators previously, it hasn't been quite difficult for them, so it's really a necessity that we find those people, meaning that we have to begin to help one another to identify means of training, because in a strategy you will see the elements of training, mentoring, and problem issues like that, even in the strategy itself. So how do we then encourage people to go for that kind of training and acquisition of those skills that are needed in running this business, these businesses? So I do think that we may just, the Kamaru mentioned, will answer questions like, you know, the issue of biodiversity, spatial planning, has it been done? But if I may just come in there, Chair, you'd call that Sandy has given us here, I think in this committee, the biodiversity was picture of our country, even underground in the geology and so forth. So that's the data that we have stored of our biodiversity. And therefore, the area discussion that we had around mining is related to this question, because in planning your mining activities, in planning your agricultural interventions that gives us food security, we then have to use that database that we have on biodiversity to decide where we allow any particular competing development to happen. So if any, we're doing that base information for purpose of ensuring that then use it to determine planning going forward. So it's an underlying information that we use for any other development. So in a way, in short, I can say yes, that planning tool is available, because we know where our biodiversity sensitivities are and so forth, where we could say yes or no. In the mining guidelines, by the way, there's one section that says there is a no-go area. And we agreed with the mining houses that in this instance it's a clear no-go area, because that's where we are made sensitive from the biodiversity point of view. Because otherwise, if you lose it, those who were listening to the discussion of yesterday night on radio, I think, were discussing very good discussion on biodiversity. Once you lose particular fish, it's lost. You can't go and manufacture and make it in an oven or in an incubation super test of a laboratory. It's gone. So we really have got to bring it back into growing and ensure that it never even are threatened at any given stage. That's why then there would be no-go areas in some of the instances. I said it made that several issues about special planning, if I may. And then I think there's an issue, Honourable Mabila speaks about this matter. I'm very, very, I think, very over the moon about this thing, of especially the bioprosthetic aspect of it. There's a lot that's happening in our country. A lot, lot. At that summit, by the way, that we have invited to be at, which is starting next week Friday in Durban, Jaguini. I learned that that conference is going on. At that summit, there's going to be a symbolic, not symbolic, the actual give handing over of what, cash money? Where communities are already benefiting in the bioprospecting space. Because you know, it's about what, 2.6 million, where communities are benefiting already in that space. So, it's where we are approached by company A, let's say, one of them paid, Sierra is not a company that's from trade, what, there are names of these companies. One of them is Traders for the name that says they come from. Approaches us to say they want to use Alu for manufacturing of lotions, skin products, and so forth and so forth, and they've already they've already proven that they can actually use it. Now they want to do bioprospecting. That's the Alu, if it's in a particular community, that's where we say this is actually indigenous knowledge that belongs to some people in South Africa. Because of their ownership of indigenous knowledge, therefore, the company pays upfront as part of payment of what they're going to be, that community is going to be getting into the future. We have this option and many other options. Of course, we are trying to move them into the lower end of the value chain as well, or part of ownership of the production line and so forth. So they don't just get that for payment for part of ownership of the, of this, of the traditional knowledge, IKS. Science and technology is doing the same work, but we are the focal point. Science and technology through CSIR and other scientists, because science and technology coordinates all of us in the research fields through the National Research Forum. So they then coordinate that work as well. So yeah, there's other work that's done of research on products of this nature outside the deer stable. But we are all part of the bigger picture. But because we can implement the international treaty on behalf of South Africa, which is Nagoya Protocol that was passed by yourself, then that's where we brought it in. So I'm trying to also cover on your question of who else, not just in the spatial production and coordination of other for other people, but also in the research and actual investigation. We also play, there are other people who are playing a role. I think the other questions then they can touch on are due to do with Operation Pacific Expanse from our documents, meaning?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Master. Just to fill the gaps, there was an inquiry about how realistic is 300,000 heads of game as part of transformation. The wildlife industry, it's so big. There's something around 11,000 game farms now in this country, and today we are sitting with something like 20 million heads of game in South Africa. Now 300,000 for 15 years, we would like to think it's a reasonable target, given the overall target of figure of 20 million game. So we believe it's achievable. Mr. talked about Nagoya Protocol. On top of that, how we are currently controlling biopiracy is through our bioprospecting access and benefit sharing regulations. We are using that as an instrument to counter biopiracy at the moment. However, things do fall within the cracks. Hence, we need an added measure of security, such as the Biodiversity Market Bank I've alluded to. We believe that will solve 99.99% of the problems we have with biopiracy. There was further an inquiry about the need for us to inform, educate community is about, particularly by prospecting industry as manufacturing. It's really a new space. It's exciting, and that's where a lot of expectation happens. Every unit of the department responsible for this body of work, we are undertaking continuous community stakeholder awareness, raising sessions on a continuous basis. I think today, as I'm sitting here, my team is out in the Northwest doing exactly that. So we are educating. First, we have to educate ourselves. Now, we are really rolling out that bioprospecting industry education on a continuous basis. We have a dedicated program called community-based natural resource management. We are using that platform. We are using platforms such as the Wildlife Forums, the newly established National Bioprospecting Forum. So there's a few platforms. We think we'll gain ground sooner than later in that. There was also an inquiry about what do we do about opportunities that we may not be aware of that exist in the provinces. As I indicated in the presentation, we're really working as a collective with the province. We have permanent provincial representatives as part of a collective that's taking this work forward. So opportunities that happen in their provinces are very quickly identified and capitalized on. We're confident that as we expand our network in the provinces, we shouldn't miss many opportunities. But remember, honorable members, if there's an opportunity, invariably, to capitalize on that opportunity, someone must come to DIA and apply for a permit anyway. So we have a tight match. They invariably have to come back to us for that. So we will know and make sure that digital transformation is addressed in that initiative. Chair, I'm not too sure if I've missed something. Some of the species that are heavily exploited and the bioparasites, you're talking cycads, a lot of cycads, we did mention Friday as well. Alu is heavily traded. It's one of the heavily traded indigenous species. And the demand is huge internationally, therefore some people try to sneak it out through the back. So Alu is one type of species. But this bioparasite has moved heavily into reptiles as well. Our green scorpions are discovering species full of snakes, of lizards. It's really, it's a problem. And lately they started to move into insects, including bees and things like that. So the bioparasite is a major problem in the country, and we really need to move faster to close net on it. Green scorpions are doing a lot of work, but we can only continue to strengthen our efforts going forward. Thank you.
I didn't cock up with the team, but I thought that actually, particularly talking about wildlife and growing the wildlife management, the 300,000 units that we would like to bring under Black Empowered and Old Trenches. There are new faster way that people in conservation have found, as always, of making money. We need to make money, yes, and allow people to make money. But ours is also to balance conservation, because our objective number one is to deal with conservation, and ensure that there's adequate conservation that continuously takes place in the country. Of late, there are people who are getting into the breeding, and I know that you discussed the breeding issues last week. I'm aware that you haven't quite touched on this one particular matter. But just to be aware, and throw this as a caveat, that we will continue to cover across some even of these Black Empowered people now beginning to transition much, much quicker to the area where others are already or have been, which is in the space of color breeding. Black Impala. blue something, a yellow verdier, those kinds of things. Special breeding, they cost a lot of money. They are bred into confined facilities under care and unhavenry and so forth, all those complicated high-level stuff, and they cost a lot of money. There's an increasing number of that program, and I think just day before yesterday I met somebody who's black, to be black empowered, who are thinking of moving into that stage of it. So as we are doing this work, we must be aware that there will still be those, and I think it's important that we must then discuss how we treat that program. We have already I've issued a request to our scientific authority to do some work around just finding us scientific measures that we can actually apply, because everything that we do, a decision has got to be science-based. Once they come, we will then decide how we handle this issue of color breeding in South Africa, because there's a much serious danger that if we just open up just like this, it could actually finally lead us to really doing away with our conservation capacity, because many people who may want to go faster into that area. Some may say they have not moved so in the lion breed area, but they're not sure in the color breeding whether that would not. Why you don't want to just withhold other people's prosperity? You need to have that balance. So I mean, once that study comes out by the scientific approach, we'll then do this. There's a whole lot of criticism in the fields. Again, it's a much more proliferated area where there are sort of two opposing groups that are saying we will do it, and others, you know, which is not the way to go. But I think as soon as that report comes out, we'll come and share it with yourselves and then take it from there. But it'll be important that you also know, because some may come with a business end and say, we need you to really to facilitate us, we have to find money and so forth, and yet it's this kind of a thing, even if it is now a color print. Here we are, just going to have a little bit of my smile.
Any additions from
maybe just on the issue that Minister has already covered on spatial biodiversity planning. Just to also add that from a conservation area perspective, there are already also plans to expand area under conservation, and those areas are already identified on the basis of their biodiversity significance. However, you will also find, for example, that we also want to be opportunistic in areas where finer scale localized biodiversity planning has not necessarily been undertaken, especially in those areas that are close to our iconic protected areas or even private nature reserves, where the landscape is the same. So in those areas, we believe that we can just extend the benefits without necessarily undertaking more detailed spatial planning, because the landscape is the same. However, there are also other areas where we will also need to step up our efforts to strengthen that level of biodiversity planning. Like, for instance, we were invited 3 years ago by a municipality in the same Cape Nyandwi area, which is in the biodiversity-rich wild coast area, where no biodiversity assessments have necessarily been undertaken, but it's such a beautiful area with steep gorges where the three rivers, Tsiza, Tina, and Zimbabwe meet. We believe that there is a great potential, for example, to establish a conservation area and to provide some wildlife. So in areas like those where there are no detailed studies undertaken, we will also make sure that we augment such planning with new assessments to be undertaken. Thank you.
I think that can conclude. Again,
that is the right direction. My message was where we are being recorded here. So I don't want that to be wrongly recorded. Again, we appreciate the work that they're doing. Of course, we are just hopeful that we will get wonderful. You know, I've always said to people of this country, one thing that is good with our government, and the best we are, the legal instruments that we have turned out, is that we realize that whilst we might have wonderful ideas, but we still put those ideas to a test, so that our people say they are safe. Hopefully through this government gazette, we then get some wonderful input from our people. And then the right minister and most of that, if ourselves, on the issue that was raised by Honorable Whip, I think we will need to also create those forums ourselves. We have constituency offices, we have places where we come from, and there are business people there, where indeed they can also be told what is in the pipeline in this department, so that indeed they speak to our people face to face, and they ready themselves for some of the opportunities that indeed might come our way in the near future. Again, let's thank you, colleagues, Minister, for the briefing that we had today on asbestos. Of course, you know, we dinner were very opportunistic. We're dealing with asbestos, then we brought other things, mine dams. Then acid mine drainage came in, so indeed we have had wonderful discussions. And again, then calibration. Now, biodiversity economy, most appreciated. Of course, we will continue having these discussions with you. And again, we have these discussions. At times, we are not forced by any piece of legislation to have these discussions. But we are forced by our responsibility as representing our people out there. That responsibility forces us to have these discussions so that as a country, as a people, we are all on the same page on how are we addressing the legacies that are up to today. Having said that, colleagues, thank you, and thank you very much. You can go wherever you are going now, but you are still at work. Thank you very much. Your meeting is adjourned. Our meeting remains. Let's take 2 minutes, colleagues.
Yeah. other companies water engineering, so they want to get millions of of their portfolio because they don't have certain people ending their interest.
No, it's not email over to a better chance. I think you have an email.
Yeah.
And I
can
or have
only
to deal with
subscription. Maybe write an email address. No, she can't. She's employed. She's employed.
I have one of these reports, and you have had that report for quite some time, and but the first thing I want to do is just to thank those who crafted it, the Shilega and the good doctor and all administrative staff. I think they've done a wonderful job capturing what indeed we interacted with. So that's the first point. The second point is, what are your inputs? If there's anything that has been left out or there's anything that is not properly captured, now, the meeting is open for you. Of course, next time, Sona is spelled as Sona, not as Swina. Yes, abbreviation. So you see that I've read. You missed that one.
The latest.
The latest.
Corrected. Okay.
Oh, this one, yes. Okay. Yes,
the presentation also includes the presentation of the asbestos, because we think it's very critical to include it on the recommendation. I don't know whether you agree, the portfolio will agree. Because I think we need to be stressing this as the priority of the department. We need to ban this in order for the light of the people that are living day in, day out to the Shabbat's results. I'm not so sure that I'm
first thing I have to say is that report itself, from where we sit in, reflects the discussions that happened. This solo will be a new matter, not necessarily related to the people RF we had discussed in the committee before. But all I wanted to suggest was that, like you said earlier on when the issue was raised, on page 18, is from the bottom, the second that talks about our physical mind dump, which we need to write a note, leaving the bottom. Now I'm saying that relates to things about dust particles and so on, mind dust, which are our concern, which are not necessarily covered. We've observed that it's not really that as a recommendation as to what needs to happen. Now, instead of being particular on the actual recommendation, we can then broaden it now. It can then cover any mind dump, asbestos, and so on and so on. Yes, everything else, without the insight that necessarily made in our discussions with the committees, with the DEA and the entities and so on, so we can then find a way of addressing it in that particular space.
No, I, think we are recommend at any rate we one of the recommendations that we have been saying we must bring forward is one that says we must have the inter-whatever committee coming before us so that we are fully split on these matters that affect our people. Mine dams, asbestos, and acid mine damage. So, but what is that committee that I say that
interdepartmental,
yes, that includes DMP, water, and deer, so that we then deal with those issues. So it must be a recommendation. So that interdepartmental team must then come meet with us in discussing, in taking this matter forward, so that it is not lost. Any other issue that you want to put? If there's nothing, I'm going to close the meeting. Thank you. This meeting is a test. Thank you. Oh, sorry. I'm very hungry. But I think at any rate, we have covered many of the issues that we want to hear. Program colleagues. Yeah.
Usually, I just need to show and I not that.
Yeah. Any mover?
Usually what happens, it didn't go finish to feed until the end. But we can do it currently. Mind it was adopted generally, but we never got any speech and then later adopt the report as a whole. So if there are no issues about that, we can simply adopt the report as a whole. We are simply the procedure about it.
Thank you. Any second? Seconded. Thank you. Next is the program. With amendment. With amendment, yes. Any matter on the program? This program between October 26 November. And since November, that's when we go home. Any comment on the program?
That week went referred to oversight. We're quite aware of the kind of pressure that we would have in this camp in terms of time. What I was going to suggest to check, and I may give reasons why we're suggesting that, is that we adopt it as is for now, but still regard the program as a living document, which from time to time, as this committee, we may come back to effect changes if certain things are not realizable in this particular camp. Because we are not operating on our own, we are also operating within the program of parliament. And some of the dates that we have not seen are going to be affected by what parliament is going to do. Now we are going to still change our program. Part of the problem we had earlier on was even continuing to work on Fridays until we close, but we have realized that it may not work to remove all the Fridays. We may still need, if we want to try and do more work this time, to still do some work on Fridays. But then part of the difficulty to other members, particularly those who will be going abroad, going to Paris, is that if on the oversight week you exhaust the entire week, depending on when people will be leaving for Paris. If you are only about a day or two to get home, get prepared, pick up a bed and leave for Paris, I think it will be too much to remember. We may need to be sensitive around that. And it's a matter that as we finalize, then members leaving for Paris and so on, we may see whether we are going to cut a day or two on the oversight and still reschedule that kind of thing to give members some 3 or 4 days before they leave to go do their taking and all of that. So I'm just saying, Chair. Okay. It would not be like that. I've been away for a week and then going to be away for another week or more. So there will have been 2 or 3 weeks of work without seeing family and maybe taking properly. They may get disorganized. So my suggestion in the measure is to say, let's adopt it for now, knowing that we are aware, we are conscious of the other underlying factors which may be factored in as we proceed without having to change the program as it is.
Yeah, is a proposal, but of course there, colleagues will remember that we had promised Smanadis that we'll come back then, because we didn't do much, we didn't even see the place. So we said that we need a day or two just to go to Smanadis. It is in that context that we have the 26th, 27th, not the whole week, just 2 days. At the point that the wind is making, we don't know when are we leaving until we know. But in fact, we are needed for the meeting of the 5th and 6th in Paris, then continue from there. So if indeed we leave around the 3rd or the 4th, it doesn't seem to be a problem. But we will firm that up as we be saying. This is a living document. Any living document can be subjected to changes. But at least as a committee, we must see all these things that we want to do here in the program. So are we then in agreement with what the way to raise it?
One more thing, sir.
Yeah.
I think that you also proposing to have a joint meeting on climate change with different committees, 1, 2, 3. And then on the same week, again, we are proposing to do it also. I don't know which one we will do. Because it's the 26th, and then on the 26th to the 27th, we want to go to Smaradiso. I think one of these must fall out, and we are left maybe with an oversight meeting. If we want to do the joint meeting, then the oversight meeting must fall out. We can't do all this on the same.
I confuse.
It's
just to clarify further, we want to stick to the program almost at least. But we know it's quite, we've got a lot on our hands. All we're saying is that one of those joint committees may happen on the 26th in the morning, and members thereafter, afternoon, further, whatever we do. But there is still a lot that we need to be done even before that joint. So whether it will be realized or not is something else. But our commitment is to see it happen. That's just one of them. So, as we say, it may not really be a major problem the way it is. And let's wait towards realizing that the better changes will come from the country. It is now the developments are as follows. We can or we may not be able to have another.
Yes, from
the
from what I'm seeing here, our next engagement is Friday.
Yes.
I will then take it, colleagues, that the program as proposed or as drafted is then, in fact, the week moved. Any second now? Maybe no second. Thank you. One issue, though, that I'm now throwing through the back door is the issue of the tariffs. The issue of tariffs. We will still need names from parties. We have not received those names. Baba TA have not received, unless the TA is not going there. So if we can get that, so that we send our list to the chair of committees, because from the ANC elite we do have the names. I'm told that it's Mr. Mtembu, Gegana, and somebody from the NCOP, the chair of the select committee. Yes. So then here we need an EFF name, but we know the EFF person, unless the name gets changed in a week, which is possible. Please. Okay. So if you can contact the EFF, so that at least we are closed on that issue. The whip also raised another matter that we might also get some, we don't know how the department looks like, but if there are possibilities of us having some people being accommodated in the delegation of the department, we'll also keep you posted. The minister has asked me to have a discussion with him on that one. So we will keep you posted. But Friday by Friday we'll be knowing how we're moving in this area.
Last week we raised the fact that we have received report also from the joint oversight that we had in KZN. Hence, by Friday, we may see members to have forwarded or not meeting forward their own inputs into that entire report, so that we know if we are to engage with the other committees, we have done our part as environment, we can then be able to conclude. Unlike if we are caught and not ready when we are done the report with us, just for some time now. Next week, we may not have that meeting, but we don't have that meeting. So it may mean that it's going to be quite long. Yeah, but I think through Dr. Scott and others, we may need to be guided our administrative processes to adopt our actually facilitated.
I bless all that are saying that we can get comments on our own priorities, so we are able to reflect.
Okay. Colleagues, this meeting is adjourned. You can go and eat. Restaurant.